Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
By the age of 19, I was running my own electrical business. And I had that business till I was 35, and that gave me a really good grounding on property and on renovating and actually how that works. And I did a lot of investing during those years, investing and renovating and selling.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors, find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategy. I'm Tarun Shum, and in this episode, we're speaking with Director of Plan Assist, Harry Charalambos. He's built an impressive property portfolio worth over $20 million. You'll learn how he used his inherited knowledge to create an electrical business that ultimately led him into smarter ways to manufacture equity in his property portfolio. So what does a hectic day in Charalambos' life look like?
My day is split between looking at, so we certainly have clients that we're searching for properties for, so I will oversee that. So I'll check in with our team here that is looking for properties for our clients and ourselves. And just to take a step back on that, we certainly started initially because of doing our own investing and developing. And then it just grew into clients wanting us to assist them with theirs. And so my day, as you asked, is split up between looking for properties for our clients and checking in with our team on that, as well as our property managers. So to check on our approvals that we have running, and we'll be getting approvals for anything from extensions, renovations, granny flats, townhouses, and up to blocks of home units for our clients. And then also checking in with the finance team on any finance for purchases, as well as construction loans. We have a real focus because of what we're doing. We have a real focus and a real expertise in the construction loan area.
Mm, your day sounds pretty full-packed. A lot of managing as well, and a lot of, I guess, following up with things, making sure that things run smoothly, especially in a business like yours. There's a lot that's involved, isn't there?
Yeah, look, it is. It is, and I certainly try and get a balance. And we've got to have a situation where I certainly have quiet time and blocked out time where I'm, you know, not answering any messages or taking any calls and that sort of thing, because you need time to focus on the next transaction that we want to do as well. So you certainly have to have that space. Otherwise, I find you get too caught up in the doing and not enough in the creating and the planning, which is equally as important as the doing of the current transactions you have going.
As the director of his business, Charalambos says that there are smart ways to manufacture equity in your property portfolio, which is what his clients take away from his services.
I am one of the directors of Plan Assist property team, and we currently run a business which is geared for helping property investors to purchase properties as well as develop those, with a real focus on manufacturing equity in your investments. I think particularly for your Sydney listeners, they've had a pretty good run over the last few years, and obviously the different parts of Australia have done reasonably well, all at different stages in the property cycle. However, what we do find is that by manufacturing some equity, it just takes you away from the reliance on growth, and we use growth as a bonus. And we certainly want to be buying in areas and buying at the right time in the property cycle. However, if we can use that and couple it with some manufactured equity strategies, can really spur on the the portfolio and spur on the investment to much greater heights and much faster.
He describes himself as both aggressive and conservative when it comes to practicing strategies for property investing, both for clients and himself.
I believe I have some aggressive strategies that we implement conservatively. So if that makes sense. So we're our strategies are quite a little bit creative, a little bit outside the box. However, at the same time, we need to look at those quite conservatively to make sure that we've dotted the I's and crossed the T's before going into the transactions.
Growing up in Sydney, Charalambos has fond memories of his parents running a fish and chip shop.
Initially, the early years were in the inner west of Sydney, so sort of anywhere between the... We had a couple of different places that we were living and schooling, so started off in the Ashfield and Concord area. So at the time, so we're talking now in the 60s and 70s, and probably into the 80s for that matter, they were probably 60s and 70s living in those areas. They're fairly, middle class, I suppose you'd want to call them. But we were, a typical migrant background, with my parents having, at that point in time, fish shops that they were running. So the fish and chip shops that are probably typical for the migrants of that era. I was growing up and that's what I knew, and just watching what they were doing is where we grew up. And we moved in the late 70s. We moved to Tarramurra, also in Sydney, but a very different feel. Much bigger blocks of land, much leafier aspect and outlook, and a different feel, different demographic totally.
The state of Ashfield, Concord and Tarramurra has altered much since then, with aspects such as the style of housing and the property values.
The Ashfield-Concord area has probably gone from being, in those years, more of a lower to middle class, to it is so gentrified now, and it is the land values and the property values now have immensely changed, and they're in much greater demand. And probably a lot more favourable than they were in those years. So it's changed immensely. And certainly the style of housing in those areas have changed. Again, typically in those years we had some, lots of your bungalows and your post-war bungalows that were probably typical, again, for that area. But a lot of those now, it's much higher density. We've had... with zoning changes and governments wanting to create more housing, much higher densities in those areas of the inner west of Sydney. As we move to Tarramurra, which is more on the north shore of Sydney, the blocks were bigger in those days and still are bigger today. The council in that area, which is Ku'ringai Council, is probably more stringent on maintaining the feel, the vibe and feel of the place. There's still much bigger blocks in that location. The feel is more family, probably more family to mid to late teens that would be in the families because of the schooling in the area. Lots of very good private schools throughout the North Shore of Sydney, and it tends to attract... and lots of good public schools too throughout the North Shore, so really good schools generally. And it tends to attract families to that area predominantly for the schooling.
With his parents' knowledge as business owners, he applied that knowledge in creating his own electrical business and developing his understanding of property investing.
I only ever knew of my parents having their own business. So to me, that was a natural progression. It was just what they did and what I did. When I left school, and I left school at the age of 15, I went on to do an electrical apprenticeship, and then by the age of 19 was running my own electrical business. And I had that business until I was 35, and that gave me a really good grounding on property and on renovating and actually how that works. And I did a lot of investing during those years, investing and renovating and selling. And again, typical for the migrants of that era, my parents were buying property, running their business, saving their money, buying property throughout that time, and hence my progression into that. And I actually bought my first property at the age of 18 whilst I was still an apprentice electrician, and that's very much influenced by my parents and watching what they did.
After leaving the electrical business, Charalambos became involved with investing in property through a program. Everything developed organically from there as he met his business partner and set up his company, Plan Assist.
Got out of the electrical business in 2003, after having it, as I said, 16 or 17 years, and then actually had a year off and was doing a little bit of property investing on my own at the time. And I actually got involved in a program that was geared towards investors and showing people how to invest. And then by 2004, 2005, I was actually helping run and facilitate that program of teaching investors. And it was just a natural progression for me. I actually met my current business partner at one of those programs, and he had a finance background, and we started doing some property transactions together. And then it was just from there we actually put his finance business and what I was doing together and set up Plan Assist in 2005. And it just sort of grew from there, I suppose. We kept getting more and more call for what we were doing. And we started by purely doing finance and a little bit of project management. And that led into then people asking us to acquire the properties for them. So we started doing the acquisition. And then about 5 years ago, we found that we were struggling with trying to keep the building side of things flowing consistently. So we actually added a building company to ours as well about 5 years ago. So it's all sort of grown naturally and sort of as the demand has required it as well. It was also probably a little bit of, I suppose, meeting a frustration and a little bit sometimes with our clients' frustration in, say, not being able to source properties, and sometimes was our own frustration in not being able to source, consultants or builders or, things that we needed. And then as we're meeting our own frustration, we were solving a frustration for our clients too.
Having saved for some years while he was an apprentice electrician, he decided to buy his first investment property in the heart of Sydney. This property was eventually sold and profits were used to purchase more properties.
The first one, as I mentioned, I was an apprentice. That was 1984, so I would have been a third year apprentice at the time, and it just I'd literally been saving for 3 years, and it just sort of felt like it was the natural next step. And certainly Dad was encouraging me. Dad was a huge influence on my property investing journey. And he was certainly encouraging me to get out there and buy something. And I think at the time I had a grand total savings of about $20,000. So I went out to see what I could do with that money, which $20,000 was a lot of money in 1984.
I was going to say, even today, $20,000 is still a lot of money.
So, however, I'm not sure $20,000 would buy you a lot in the inner west of Sydney today. But I went out and started looking, and what I found was a property in Auburn, so pretty much the heart of Sydney, or the geographical heart of Sydney, as it is today. And I bought a fairly typical three-bedroom, single-fronted home in Auburn on a standard block for the area, which was quite small, probably sort of 400 or 450 square metres at the time. And purchased that for $59,000 and used my $20,000 to make up a 20% deposit plus some stamp duties plus some legal fees. And then I think my $20,000 was all spent. And that property I actually kept for quite some time, just had it rented out for the whole time, and really did some renovations. Initially, certainly was doing those renovations myself, and myself and Helen. Helen is my wife, and I met Helen in 1987. So I'd owned that property already. However, as tenants were moving out, we would go in there and give it a coat of paint, or, you know, when it was time for a new kitchen, we'd organise a new kitchen, buying flat pack kitchens, or buying kitchens that were out of kitchen showrooms that were no longer needed, and doing the renovations ourselves. And we kept that property until 1995 or 96. I think we sold it in 96 for $142,000. And went on to buy other properties with those funds. But it was, I think, initially at a $59,000 purchase, had a rental of $80 a week. So it was quite modest at the time, but it certainly served us well.
Coming up after the break, we'll delve further into Charles Umbus' story on how he grew his property portfolio.
We actually sold quite a few down just during the last few years because we felt the timing was right, and we've put currently a lot of our funds are now shifted into commercial property.
One of his worst investing moments?
Everything complied, the land size was right, the zoning was right when we purchased this property, and then by the time we submitted our DA with council, they had actually changed their minimum lot size.
And that's next. I'm Tarun Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Are you looking at buying or investing in property? Don't panic. Property is still a great investment. Is it now the time to buy, sell, or hold? Find out from Australia's leading industry experts on how to take advantage of today's market. You'll learn the secrets to renovating for profit, or gain the knowledge, skills, and motivation to invest at the First Home Buyers Masterclass, plus much, much more. Whether you're a new or experienced investor, you can't miss the Sydney Property Buy Expo on the 7th, 8th, and 9th of September. Use the promo code PI for a 3-day free pass valued at $50. For tickets and more information, visit propertybuyexpo.com.au. Charles Umbus has continued to add to his property portfolio over the years, with around 12 in total through commercial investments.
We've actually sold quite a few down just during the last few years because we felt the timing was right. And we've put currently a lot of our funds are now shifted into commercial property. So we're probably more focused on commercial and on our transactions that we're doing. We're doing some property options, which we may talk about a bit later, and we have done quite a few of those, and we do continue to do those. But yeah, we've probably got, I think at the moment, on the commercial side of things, there would be probably 12 to 14, sort of that sort of stage. We've got a couple of offers in there on one or two at the moment that we're selling as well. So we're at that, around that sort of level. We're actually just working on a couple too with some rezonings, working with council on some rezonings, and packaging those for development and redevelopment.
He discusses the reason behind selling his residential properties and focusing on commercial property, saying that it came down to greater opportunities.
We were finding with the residential, the returns were so much lower, and our opportunities, we actually had a few that we had some good opportunities for on some rezonings and getting some DAs, and we did that and sold them, but we just found the opportunities were better in the commercial sphere, so we moved across into the commercial. We're just, again, as I mentioned, just manufacturing that equity. We were just finding some better opportunities in the commercial sphere, so that's where we've shifted at the current time.
These opportunities include improved rental returns and the freedom to make changes to the properties.
The rental return is far greater, and we're finding that because of the development upside of what we're doing, then our ongoing equity and manufactured equity is also a lot greater. And because of the level of, we're talking, commercial properties probably to the value of 20-odd million dollars, depending on, valuations and the like, we can make a difference to those quite substantially pretty easily. We can increase zonings or increase floor space ratios or increase rents. In our commercial leases, for instance, we've always got annual locked-in rental increases, that just go on every year. And that just is increasing our bottom line on an ongoing basis without needing to worry about you don't get the phone calls from your commercial tenants asking for, tap washers and asking for, block toilets or asking for blown globes and that sort of stuff. You just don't get it. They just deal with it themselves.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of commercial is that everything's all managed by them. They don't even have, we don't have to worry about, those little minor issues. It's just collecting the rent.
Yeah, so we've gone a lot into the commercial and into some cash investments as well at the moment that we're, I just want to see exactly what this market is going to do with where we're sitting with interest rates and where we're sitting with the marketplace. We are seeing some opportunities coming back in the resi market, but I feel I'm probably still 12 months before I'll be comfortable to get back into some of the resi stuff. I think we've just seen things started to level off a little bit at the moment, and again, I'm probably a bit more opportunistic, so I'm just looking for a couple of more opportunities that we'll jump into there. But it's and I suppose some of the resi that we do, with what they are, I still consider them their commercial transactions, even though we may be holding residential property. So we may amalgamate two or three neighbouring properties and, do DAs for townhouses or blocks of apartments. And they're what I consider very much, commercial transactions, even though they're, on residential land.
Charles Lumbers talks about one of his worst investing moments, which has taught him to be cautious with his investments.
Essentially, I'm actually very, very grateful for my time in the industry, and that starts from, as I mentioned, when I was doing my apprenticeship, because it taught me a lot about the property market. And then my investments, again, we've been, for whatever reason, I consider it very lucky to have generated what we have done out of the property sector. So, but one thing that I'm really clear on, and one thing that I always share with people, particularly, if I'm presenting on stage, is that I'll tell people that we there is always risks, and you only need, I only ever invest what you're prepared to risk. It's just you do need to be very, very careful. So some of our transactions, if I were to share some of those that went not necessarily the way we wanted them to, we actually worked on a site that was in northwest Sydney, in Kenthurst, so in the hills area of Sydney, hills district of Sydney, where we were looking to do a subdivision, and we were working with council on doing that, and everything complied. The land size was right, the zoning was right when we purchased this property, and then by the time we submitted our DA with council, they had actually changed their minimum lot size, and it was a real issue for us. So we were suddenly holding a block of land that we'd purchased, or it was a block of land with a house on it, that we'd purchased with the intention of subdividing and on selling. And then we were told by council that that block did no longer comply for a subdivision. So it was a major issue for us. They generally will give notice, but it depends on where they're at in their planning process. So unfortunately with this one, their planning process was quite a way down the track, and they gazetted it after we'd bought it. However, we hadn't lodged our DA yet. So had our DA have been in, our application, development application, had it been lodged with council, it may have been a different outcome for us.
Overcoming that, he was forced to sell and learn the important lesson of always conducting due diligence and considering all the possible outcomes beforehand.
We ended up doing some work to the existing home and ended up, there was certainly a possibility for a second dwelling on the house, which we did. And what that did was recoup some of the funds. However, we couldn't subdivide. So those two dwellings had to sell, had to stay on one title. It probably in the end, I think, was in the vicinity of, we still lost about $115,000 overall on that project. And it was, at the time, it hurt. It was a lot of money. And still is a lot of money. We're now talking that would have been early 2000s, so 2002, 2003. So we probably weren't helped in the Sydney market by the fact that 2003 was the top of the market. So we had to get out because we could see the market was going the wrong way. And the lesson from that for us was always about understanding that we'd purchased this property to do a subdivision, and hence now why we're a lot more careful going into our transactions, and we will just about always set up some form of a due diligence period or some form of an option to give us the time to be able to do our due diligence with council and get some answers from council and our consultants on what is possible. And to give you an example on that, there is one on the market today, a residential block, which we believe is subdivisible. We certainly haven't purchased it and haven't even put an offer in, but it's currently with our town planner to make sure that we can do what we want to do before we submit any offers. So we just, you've got to be very, very careful. A lot of people just feel that, it's a big block, or someone's done it next door, or someone's done it around the corner, or I've done it before, doesn't mean that you can do it today.
The moment where everything fell into place was when he created a formula that he was able to apply to multiple transactions with great success. He considers these as win-win situations for both himself and the vendors looking to sell.
We've done joint ventures with people, for instance, that have sites that are either subdivisible or you can do multi-dwelling housing on it. And we actually go in and we'll work with an owner to unlock that potential. And we've done several where, for instance, we've had a property where you can build two dwellings on, and we will go in and do that. Now, the aha moment there came in where we were looking for all these. We're looking for a property, looking to do subdivisions, and we could never get the feasibility to work, or rarely get the feasibility to work. Then all of a sudden we went in and started talking to the owners, and in this particular instance what happened was I went into an open home and the agent had to leave, and literally we got there and the owner had just arrived home, the agent was just leaving, however I knew the agent, and they said, "Is it okay, you know, we've got to go?" And I said, "Yeah, I'll just have a look around the outside." And as I was just finishing up, the owner turned up back home, and then I started talking to the owner. And so I asked her what she wanted to do, you know, when she left, when she moved out. And she said, "Oh, look, really, I want to stay in the area. However, I'm just looking for a smaller home." And the aha moment was, well, if she wants to stay in the area and she's looking for a smaller home and I feel I can build two on this block, why doesn't she keep one of these? And so we worked with her and actually built two. She kept one and we kept one. However, what we did there, we actually created a recipe of these and said, well, if this works and people like it, why don't we do more of them? And we've gone on to do 10 or 12 of these now with owners, and one of them we actually built four homes and did a profit split. And these work really well. And what I like about them is that they're repeatable. So I can have a formula that I work to, We can tick the boxes. We know what land size we need. We know what the sales are going to be. We can control our construction cost, and we minimise our risk. Really important to minimise the risk. And learning from that previous experience that I mentioned to you, in these examples, I don't ever buy the land. In fact, I'm never the owner of the property. I just build the dwellings. Owner keeps one, we sell one, and we take our profit.
Inspired by this story, we'll continue the conversation in a future episode on property investory, where we'll discuss how to apply the strategy.
So we actually got an increased valuation before we even purchased the property. So from our point of view, it de-risks the transaction. It means that we're able to pay the owner, in a lot of cases, a little bit more because we're not having to pay holding costs for the 12 months.
What success habits he has taken on his property journey?
I mentioned earlier about blocking, in the previous podcast, blocking time out for myself and some quiet time. And my business partner often talks about the times where the success is created the most is actually when I go on holidays. Because what happens is you get that time, you come back with a clear head.
And that's next time on a future episode of Property Investory. Also, are you looking at buying property in 2018? Would you like expert tips and advice on the best ways you can purchase property? Whether you're a new or experienced investor, learn from the experts by downloading the Property Investment Buying Handbook. It contains the best tips and advice from 37 of Australia's leading property experts. Simply visit propertyinveststory.com and subscribe to get your copy right now. Thanks for listening.